Ann Harrigan is the conductor of two orchestras, one in Billings, Montana, and one in Battle Creek, Michigan. Both have had their seasons disrupted by the pandemic, including a Battle Creek finale that was to have featured a Gilmore Young artist as part of a longtime collaboration with the Gilmore Keyboard Festival. Ann, I know it's been hard, but I also know you are a planner and a practicer and a fighter. So with no orchestra to conduct, how have you been spending your time?
It's funny to say that. I saw a cartoon a couple months ago with a conductor trying to, conduct the dogs or something. And his wife is like, just stop and, go conduct doing some yard work or something. So nice to hear your voice in person. Of course, I enjoy hearing you on the radio, Kara. But yes, it was very interesting because I would say for the first 2 weeks, we were all just in shock and didn't do much, at first. And then we kicked into major high gear. And the first thing that we did is we got some wonderful support from some of our patrons to convert our some funds and some additional donations. And we started providing free online lessons for students in Baltimore.
And what students did you reach?
Well, we've had people every day. People are still signing up for the lessons. They have to be students in the Battle Creek schools. And it's been instrument, voice, piano, a lot of strings. A lot of the teachers have sent us over their students that they haven't been able to teach. And so we have, of course, all of our symphony musicians, many of whom are accomplished teachers. And we have our community music school. We have a lot of teachers there. And so we've been able to give lessons to students, and we're continuing that through the summer and possibly even through the fall for those people who perhaps, couldn't afford lessons, and these students who weren't able to get their instruction in school. And of course, they've devoted so much time to learning those instruments, and they've really enjoyed the lessons. And Justin Gian, our operations manager, he said he's really enjoyed watching them as well and seeing the different teaching styles that everybody has.
That's an impressive and fast pivot. Do you believe that even any familiarity when a person is young, that just even attempting to play an acoustic instrument will have an impact later on in their life, whether they're a player or an appreciator?
Oh, I know that that's the case. And everybody I run into who played an instrument, they tell me, even if they didn't play it for a long time, they really enjoyed it. They're glad they did. I've never met anybody who has said, I'm sorry I played, the trombone. Many people who say, I'm sorry I didn't keep going with it, but nobody who says that they regretted it. It's such a great experience, and it does enhance their understanding and appreciation for all sorts of things, not only symphonic concerts, but even when you're watching a movie, watching television, or watching a video game for that matter. You can appreciate the music in a different way having done it yourself. And I even know that myself, as an old coot, I guess I would say, I started up with lessons. I started taking lessons for the first time in about 32 years. The first one was a little painful. But having that experience of that one-on-one lesson with a teacher and developing that rapport, and it does work over the internet. And it's interesting because I think there was a great deal of hesitation on the part of many people as to whether or not it was possible to effectively teach through Skype. Or Zoom, in our case, would do. But because I had been taking online lessons every week for a year, I could say with impunity, they're very effective, and you can improve, and you can have a really nice rapport with the teacher and the student. It just takes a few tricks. But the teacher I have has been doing this for a long time and kind of coached me through it, to tell you the truth. So I think that's one of the reasons why I jumped on the online teaching so quickly, because I knew that it's an immediate way for people not to be isolated, to have that engagement with a professional. And, between the community music school and the Battle Creek Symphony, we have fantastic musicians that are available. You don't even have to leave your backyard.
So you didn't have any initial reluctance to get over. You were gung-ho for reaching out through the internet and using these programs to enhance young individuals' growth during a time when everyone is stuck at home.
Yes. No, you know me. I'm not the one to have reluctance. I'm usually the one that my staff has to say, okay, wait a minute. We need to do things like have a permission form. You know, we need to make sure that security protocols are in place, which we do. So it's a good thing I have a staff that makes sure that we, you know, dot all the I's and cross all the T's, because I can be guilty of, okay, let's put on a show.
We've seen a shutdown in Michigan and then a relaxation. It's starting to open again. And now with more cases coming on, there's a possible, you know, contraction once again. It's gone up and down. And how has that affected your thinking about the next season?
Oh, good grief. I hate to say it. I look at the numbers every day, and it's like wishing them to be better. And I sort of watch people's behavior, and I'm just try to keep thinking good thoughts that people will be more serious and stay safe. You know, I think it's a team effort. We're all in this together. So one of the other things that I've been working on, which has been really quite fulfilling for me personally, is putting together, and I don't know if you've seen them, Kara, but recordings of past pieces, many of which have been broadcast on WMUK Radio, mm-hmm. but putting them to graphic images and putting them on YouTube. So we have the WMUK broadcast that we've had, you know, for our patrons. We were just recently on Performance Today, and now you can check us out on YouTube and Facebook as well. And I've had people from all over the country call. In fact, somebody just told me that her mother called from New Mexico and said, I just heard Ann Harrigan, and that was Performance Today. And so part of the change with COVID-19 is realizing that usually in the summertime we would have been kind of quiet. But because we felt, even in the spring, that people needed us and we need to get over, as you said, our shock and dismay, and we needed to get out there for our patrons. And we have had so much response from people saying, thank you for giving me something else to think about. Thank you for the wonderful memories of this past performance that I heard, or something I had never heard. You know, I just love this piece. So it's been an interesting experience for me because it requires video editing. So I had to teach myself how to do that. I did a little bit maybe 10 years ago, and so, you know, bring myself up to speed and my software and videotaping myself. You can imagine how much I love that, but I'm getting over that. And my husband has been a rock. He built basically a studio for me.
Wow.
So I have it in the office, so we have everything set to go. So I have everything from conducting lessons for kids to interviews, and we'll be doing a lot more interviews with, you know, upcoming music when we have our concerts coming up. And also the Ingalls Brothers, Ingalls Brothers Productions up in Grand Rapids, who are two former boy choir students, are fantastic videographers and editors, and they've done some for us too, and really fun and creative to see how they interpret the music, you know, to photos and video. So I don't know how many we've got, maybe 30. Yeah, pretty many. You can check us out on our page on battlecreeksymphony.org, and we call it From Our Hearts to Your Home. You can look right on there and check out everything. We've got instrument demonstrations from some of our principals that are fascinating. Our principal horn talks about all the different types of horns, and they're just doing this, you know, in their living rooms, basically. So it's been a fun way to relive the music, get to know the players on a different level, and connect up with people that I really, truly miss seeing and performing for.
I do. Yeah, I understand that. Tell me again where to find this material and where to get in touch if, say, you're just hearing this for the first time and you know a young person in the school system in Battle Creek that would enjoy lessons or getting involved.
So if you go to yourmusiccenter.org or battlecreeksymphony.org, mm-hmm. You can see, I think Your Music Center will have the link for the lessons. And so I would say right on there, there's a banner. And if you look on Hearts to Home, if you click on that, then you'll see all of the videos. And if you, there's also something about online lessons. If you click on online lessons, it should give you all the information, the permission slips right there. It specifies who's eligible. And basically, I think it's 4 1-half-hour lessons that each student is eligible for.
Wow. Now, the Black Lives Matter movement has just touched every corner of this country, and we're seeing the biggest, most sustained protests in history. How has the Battle Creek Symphony Orchestra reacted to the movement?
Well, it's interesting because when it first happened, the very first week, our executive director was out of town, and we were discussing how to respond when everybody put up the black squares on Blackout Tuesday, and we didn't want to make a response without really thinking about it. And some people had asked us if you really need to make a response, and we appreciated, you know, the discussion. And Susan and the executive committee and I reached out at Susan's behest and spoke to as many artists and community leaders of color as we could. I think we maybe between 30 and 40, I think, is how many people we talked to, with lengthy conversations. And it really changed us. And Susan drafted kind of a response to it, which you can also see on our website, which was very honest. And it's continued. It's diversity is one of our 5 strategic pillars. So I think we thought we were doing really well until we actually started having these conversations. We realized we weren't even scratching the surface of what we could or should be doing. And so it's we renewed our efforts, and in fact, I am I'm planning on commissioning a piece of music similar to Peter Boyer's Ellis Island. Mm. I don't know if you know that piece.
It's a piece it's a piece that uses voices from immigrants.
Yes, yes. So James Lee III is a fantastic composer, a U of M grad. From St. Joseph, Michigan, currently teaching in Baltimore. And I met him in Chicago, and I loved his music. And he and I have been communicating about programming his music for months, ever since we met last November. And then when this all came up, we kind of reconnected. And he says, you know, I really want to write something in response to everything that's going on. And we came up with this idea of kind of testimonies, you know, people telling their stories, because as you saw on social media, not only are there protests, but we're seeing people coming out with very personal stories that are shocking, just absolutely shocking things that are happening to them on a day-to-day basis, how they feel, what it's like, you know. And so we want to capture that in addition to also telling the stories of some events in American history that are not as well known to all of our audiences. One specific example is Emmett Till, who you may be aware of, Kara, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Does that name ring a bell to you?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so a lot of people I've talked to, people who are not people of color, haven't heard the name before. And of course, Emmett Till was a 14-year-old boy from Chicago who was visiting his family, aunt down south, and he walked into a store, and nobody knows exactly what happened, but they think that he flirted with the grocery store, the woman behind the counter, and subsequently he was kidnapped and murdered and dumped in the river. It's just an absolutely horrifying story that in some ways inspired quite a bit of, this is in the 50s, mm-hmm. Some of the civil rights movements in the 60s. In fact, Rosa Parks quoted that she thought about him when she did not give up her seat. You know, So anyways, that's one of the stories we'll be telling. We'll be talking from the, you know, kind of from a fictional perspective, but trying to tell it in a way that people can really relate to. And then the Tulsa Massacre is another one. And then just telling some of these stories that people have been sharing, the honesty and the good and the bad, the feeling that some people have shared when they see these signs, Black Lives Matter. It's been touching people. So that's a big project I'm working on right now. It'll be about a 25-minute piece. And it's I'm collaborating with James Lee, Dr. Gerald Blanchard, who is a wonderful artist at KCC, as well as some other fantastic Battle Creek artists. And that's going to be in March of 2022, which seems like a long ways away. But it takes that long to really, you know, do the research. And this is a piece that will be built out of more conversations about race.
And James Lee needs time to, you know, wrestle with the piece itself and write, compose it. You might not see the manuscripts for a year.
That's true.
Well, that is some forward thinking. 2022 premiere from the Battle Creek Symphony Orchestra of an important new work by James Lee III, who I have not heard of. I will have to look up his biography and see if I can hear some of his music.
Yeah, see if you can find I don't know if it's recorded. Just check him out. There's a Sukkot Rising, I think what it's called. He paired it with The Planet. It's a brilliant, brilliant writing. He studied with Michael Doherty, and you can kind of hear those influences with those colors. And he's got a wide variety of pieces. He's written for a lot of major symphonies. He had a commission for the Detroit Symphony that got canceled. I mean, it was written. It just, the premiere was canceled. So hopefully that will be scheduled very soon.
Are there any other projects in the works for this next season or the season after that you can share?
Well, one of the things that we are doing and have been doing is approaching equity, diversity, and inclusion from a variety of different standpoints. I mean, one is to tell the stories of indigenous populations. Motown, you know, for example, that's the story. It's a, you know, story of Black history, a critical story of great artists, great businessmen, entrepreneurs. And that's one way to do that. We've done that. We've done West Side Story. But another angle is to go exactly the opposite way, which is to employ artists of color in roles that are completely contrary to their story, as one of the Sidney Morton would say. For example, if you look at most Broadway productions, if you do a Google search, let's say, for Guys and Dolls, you'll see a primarily white cast with kind of the obligatory one or two artists of color. There are so many fantastic artists of color that tend to be typecast and can only get hired for, you know, Motormouth Maybelle in Hairspray or Big Mama in Chicago, or, you know, Motown the Musical or Hamilton or In the Heights, you know, very limited roles. And so my intention is to turn the tables completely. And so for Guys and Dolls, for example, all the leads will be artists of color. And that will be the first in a series of musicals. Just because there's so many fantastic artists, they don't get a chance to do those roles. So, for example, Sidney Morton, I mentioned, she she was Florence Ballard in Motown the Musical on Broadway, and U of M graduate, and she said, I'd love to sing Laurie in Oklahoma.
Hmm.
Like, great, let's do it. You'd be a fantastic Laurie, you know. And it's interesting that another person, I asked her what she'd like to do. She's fantastic, a Mexican-American singer, and she said she'd love to sing Nellie on South Pacific. And she didn't think she'd ever be able to do it because it's always a white person. And so now that brings up some really interesting challenges, though, because with these older musicals, you've got you know, it's a very historical, and you've got some racist text that has to be dealt with. And so it can be very complicated, which is kind of part of the journey. You know, before I pick a musical, I have to read all of the text. I have to discuss it with the artist and think, do we go forward? Do we do a concert version usually. How do we address the racism? The King and I is a perfect example, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very, very racist. And so it's these revisions, you know, of these old musicals, they're part of our history also, but we have to sort of hit it head on. And the W.K. Kellogg Foundation has an initiative called Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation, which also talks about some of that. You know, you can't put on West Side Story without really hitting head on, you know, the some of the language and talking about it. So it's an interesting journey, really seeing where our history was. And I feel like we're making progress some days, and some days I don't. You know, so I think it's our obligation, don't you, to put these things out there.
Yeah, the alternative is to keep doing things the way they have been, or ignoring works of the past that are still worthy of performance, but have issues with them. I think that's how art is transformed, and that's what artists want to do: perform, play music, think about, grapple with art and why they do it. And certainly there's been a lot of time to think. There's been a lot of time to kind of gain some insight about why we do the things we do, and can it change?
I honestly think that's why the Black Lives Matter movement is taking off right now. Because there is time to reflect, and people can't just jump into, oh, well, you know, I put my black square up and I'm going back to my life. It's the time when people really are seeing. I think people are taking this in, more than ever before. I think a year ago, the Battle Creek Symphony would probably say we don't get involved in that. You know, we don't get involved in politics is probably what would have been said. And things have really changed, and I really have to credit our executive director. She took the lead on this. You know, she has pages and pages of notes of people she talked to, and inspired me to talk to people and listen to people, more importantly. And we'll continue to do that. But I also want to say that the honesty that people of color have given to us has been amazing. I'm so grateful that people would trust us enough to share some pretty personal feelings, you know, that we're grateful, because we can't learn. I saw somebody post on Facebook I think today, and there was a comment on something saying, this is, you know, this is not Chicago. Battle Creek doesn't have a racism problem. Get over it. Stop talking about it. And I thought, okay, this is, you know, I thought that was interesting. Sad, but interesting.
Yeah. I think everywhere has a racism problem.
I don't know that I knew that, though. I don't think when I came here, I didn't think there was. I wasn't aware.
Well,
you know, I am.
As a white woman, I have this luxury of not having to think about it all the time. And
exactly.
Yeah, that is one of the things that has just been a daily awareness ever since the killing of George Floyd, and the simplicity of the Black Lives Matter movement message.
You been talking about it at the station as well, I'm sure?
Yes, as we can. We have video meetings, and it's an ongoing discussion, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is. And that's the thing. That's why I'm actually excited that this premiere isn't till 2022. And there's other pieces we'll be looking at. We'll be looking at the Joel Thompson, Seven Lives of the Unarmed, doing that in the future. Fantastic piece of music commissioned by the Sphinx Organization for the University of Michigan Men's Glee Club.
Mm.
But this is an ongoing conversation. 2 years from now, we cannot forget, you know, the... So it's interesting, but you were talking about the dilemma between works of art that have merit but are flawed.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about Wagner.
Oh, it sure does.
Right?
Yeah, very Carmen, problematic for centuries.
Yeah, but specifically Wagner, because when I was in Baltimore, I lived in Baltimore for many years, and Baltimore has the third largest Jewish population in the United States, at least it did at that time. And I think it is fair to say that Wagner had not been programmed with the Baltimore Symphony from the time of World War II until probably the 1990s. And it was not until, I believe it was either Bernstein or Mehta and the Israeli Philharmonic programmed Wagner. It was not until then that the kind of informal ban was lifted. And but that's a perfect example of a very complicated question. You know,
yeah.
horribly flawed individual. I studied him in college. You know, a great artist, but not a great man. So.
Yeah. People who are listening now who might not know his history, Richard Wagner was an anti-Semite, a virulent one.
Yes, he was.
He tried to trash the legacy of other composers, including Felix Mendelssohn. And yeah, it wasn't just a personal quirk where he was concerned.
Correct. Thank you. Well, not only that, but he was also held up by the Nazi Party as being the standard of,
yeah,
you know, perfect music. So that's the dilemma, isn't it? And so I think you don't program works of composers like that without doing some reading and soul searching and understanding what it is that you're doing. But we do program works of Wagner, and it is great art. So it'll be interesting to have those conversations moving forward. Do we erase our history, or do we confront our history? So,
yeah, my last little note isn't even a question. I just typed out the importance of music, and because this art form itself is a reason for being, is a reason for being human, and even though there are complications behind it, somehow performing and being an artist and studying this art form does tend to bring us together, tends to elevate people in a group.
Look at what happened on social media during the shutdown. Music exploded more than anything else on YouTube. People came together, they sang, they performed. They did everything they could to make music to express themselves. Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah. Although I was often I wanted to be there in person so much that I don't always make it through the video. Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's so true. Well, we should talk about plans.
What are...
You know me, as you said. We have plans.
You're a planner. That's right.
I am such a planner. I have so many scenarios. I think it's making the staff's head spin. And remember that I have two orchestras. So that going through this, of course, two orchestras in two different states. I also conduct in Montana, where thankfully for them, the outbreak was much smaller. It has the second smallest population or most sparse population in the country. So that didn't hurt. But what we know is that music is so important and our audiences need it. Our audiences are telling us that. They really, anecdotally, and the first thing we're doing is we're actually reaching out to our audiences today, as a matter of fact, surveying our concert goers, and we'll have it on Facebook this week. We want to hear from you. How are you feeling? If we are allowed to, Would you want to attend a concert with appropriate social distancing? That would probably involve masks. If you, because we have stage plots for the orchestra, we have a program in place that would allow social distancing for the orchestra. We have measured it out by the German standards, who has studied this extensively to the extent that different instruments are spaced differently depending on whether or not, for example, flutes, you know, there is a possibility that's being studied more that the virus could be transmitted through the end of the flute or at the headpiece, but that's being studied. Strings, on the other hand, can play with a mask, and we all know that the mask is very effective. So, but we also know that the droplets lose their effectiveness after a certain point and they drop to the ground. So we have stage plots in which we've designed the orchestra. So it is our intention that if it is allowed by the governor, and I think our governor takes this very seriously, so if it is allowed, then we will perform. The question is whether or not we will be performing for probably a hybrid audience, I'm guessing, which will be starting out, if there's interest, which I believe there will be, with a very small audience, testing the waters, making sure everybody's safe, and gradually increasing depending on, you know, what's going on with the outbreak. At the same time, Ingalls Brothers will be working with us, and we are planning on offering live stream performances for our subscription performances.
Okay,
so that's the short version. it's a lot. There's a lot of ifs in that, and that's kind of what we've been working on. The first thing is the most complicated thing is we won't be doing, for example, the high school choruses in September. We will push that off until there is a vaccine. We were going to have 120 students on stage singing. Well, you can't social distance with 200 people on the stage.
Not possible.
But this is the 250th birthday of Beethoven, and Beethoven's 7th is an absolutely fantastic piece of music. So we're going to open with that, and we are going to open with the Tchaikovsky Serenade for Strings, which is a piece I've wanted to perform with this orchestra forever. We just have such a wonderful string section. Two pieces that can be very easily socially distanced with the orchestra. And at the same time, and then the question is, what size audience and will we have? And then we go from there, and we institute safety measures. And so we may be waving to everybody from the screen. We may have, you know, 50 people. We may have 100. That part we don't know because, first of all, we need to hear from the governor and the health department. And second, we need to hear from all of you. So if you're a concert goer, if you should be getting an email with a survey. Please respond to the survey. And we're interested in hearing pretty much from everybody. If you don't receive an email, check us out on Facebook in the next couple of days and let us know how you're thinking. Because really everything we do is for our audiences, and we want to provide the kind of experience that they're looking for and that they need right now.
Well, you heard it here on Classical WMUK, Anne Harrigan and the Battle Creek Symphony Orchestra planning to perform a concert either online or online with people in the audience, safely spaced as well as safely spaced on stage. What is the date of this Beethoven Tchaikovsky concert?
Well, we're probably going to do that in November. That's something we'll be sending out probably in November, because what we're planning on doing is for October concert, we're going to do a test run, basically probably a string quartet, and that will be a live stream test run because it'll be free to all of our subscribers. We just want to have a practice session. And then November 21st will be, that's our plan in any case, will be the Tchaikovsky Beethoven concert. Our Holiday Pops concert, we haven't figured out quite what we're going to do. We're going to hold off on the Cirque de la Symphony for the following year. And Guys and Dolls, we are planning on moving to late spring, just to give us a little more room, you know, to see how things go. So some of the specifics I can't quite commit to, except I fully expect that we are going to have a season. And it will be not a packed stage. It'll be a new kind of look with the socially distanced, but it's going to be wonderful. We need it.
Yes. You're filling me with hope just listening to this idea. We can't just keep going on the way we have been without artists being artists and doing their thing. And it's been great to check in with you today. I'm sure we will check in again in a few weeks and find out how these plans are going. I do have some music here queued up from the John Williams concert of November 2018. There's a couple.
Wonderful.
We can hear some highlights from Jurassic Park to give us a energetic way out of the hour, if that sounds good to you.
I think that sounds fantastic.
Well, it's been great to hear your voice. I look forward to a future when we can sit across the table from each other once again and talk into the microphones and see each other. So I hope that's not too far away. And it's been really great to talk to you today. And any final thoughts for our listeners?
Just everybody stay safe. And the more everybody wears the mask, the sooner we can all get together again.
Sounds good, Anne. I will talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Kara. You too.